like sometimes is the mindset. And mm-hmm. I just think that if we could start from a better, more kind place of understanding, we'd get a lot more done and we'd lose a lot less teachers who get, you know, frustrated and beat up.
It's like you reframe the narrative, right? Let's reframe the narrative from the beginning, right? Yeah, for sure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Gina Guarino-Bulli. She is the CEO at Renaissance Academy Charter, and that's in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. Gina, thanks for being here today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tell everybody a little bit, Gina, about the Renaissance School and your role there.
Sure. So Renaissance Academy Charter School has been opened since 2000 in the Phoenixville area school district.
25 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we are, my role has a bit to do with how we're organized. We're organized very much like a small school district. We are our own LEA in Pennsylvania. So myself as the CEO operate much like a superintendent in a small school district. So overseeing, you know, daily operations, budget, enrollment, teacher employment, and so forth. And I have three principals that work at the school that operate their buildings. We have an elementary, middle school, and high school principal. And that's very much how a lot of our systems and structure is divided.
Nice. Very nice. So how many students do you guys have?
Just a enrollment. 1,200.
Nice. Nice. And it's pre-K or kindergarten? Where do you guys start?
Kindergarten through 12th grade.
Nice. So, and you said three buildings, right? So K through six, K through five. How do you guys have it set up?
Kind of a conglomerate of buildings. We actually operate within a condo situation with a few other owners as well outside of the school. So we are kind of spread out mainly in three main buildings with some annex space. So the school breakdown is K-4 is elementary, 5-8 is middle school, and then 9-12 is the high school.
Gotcha. That's awesome. So what would you say if you're a new mom or somebody in your area who's looking for a school, what makes Renaissance Academy the place to go?
So what I like to say to new families who are touring or visiting or just inquiring about the school, Renaissance Academy is a place where school choice really comes into focus. You know, there are many great schools in PA, in our area, that maybe are walkable or close to you. So making a choice to move your child to a different public school, you know, it's really about what you and your child are looking for. And sometimes that's very specific. We have families that have students with us and a sibling somewhere else. So it's not necessarily even a one size fits all for your family. Mm-hmm. We really focus on having a college preparatory experience. All of our students are gaining the opportunity and working toward that long-term goal. But of course, we have kindergartners. So many families come to us for all different reasons. We have an all-day academic kindergarten, which is very appealing to many of our families. Some families love the fact that they can have their students in the same school, in the same building, no matter how old they are. So if they do have siblings, they're together. They're not spread across multiple district buildings. And that makes it kind of more of a family system or a family feel. A lot of our staff have been with us a long time. So it's very likely that your cousin, your brother, your sister had a teacher that you're now having. So that's definitely an experience that, you know, some of our families really find valuable and look forward to. We also have a very strong focus on the arts. All of our students in kindergarten have 2 fine art periods a day. A lot of our students and our families come to us because they know that they're going to have that additional enrichment outside of the academic program. School day and year is a little longer than some of our sending districts.
Oh, okay.
That's how we fit in some of those additional experiences. Yeah. So lots of different factors and reasons depending on, you know, what your child and your family are looking for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's really nice. So let's talk a little bit about teachers and what you guys are doing to help and support your teachers, because I know that's something that you guys are really focused on, and you know, retention is and teacher shortages. Everybody knows that that's an issue. So it sounds like you guys are doing some good things there.
Yeah, we really try to have a pulse on how our staff are doing, how they're handling the stress that we all know comes in education and in a classroom. Some things that have really changed over the past couple of years, I've definitely seen an uptick of that question during interviews, which is exciting. What can I expect when I come here? What kind of professional development is there? So I think as teachers are coming out of the college programs, they're really thinking about that. They're really being encouraged to ask about that. And that's so important, just knowing that a young teacher or a new teacher is aware that they need to grow, but they want to know how a school is going to help them, you know, continue to grow and meet the students' needs. But on the flip side, we have a number of staff in the past couple of years that have come to us from other careers. So they're also needing support, but it looks very different. They maybe have a little more life experience, or they've been doing some different things, but now, you know, going into the teaching field might be a very different dynamic, very different demands than working in a different industry. So we do have a pretty robust induction program that all of our new staff go through, whether they're new to us or new to teaching. And that is a great place where all those new people can kind of come together, have that community. And they're also being guided by our achievement director, who runs that program, has a very good handle on the school as a whole, but what the goals and the focus of the kids are, and is supported by our teacher coach, our special education, and a number of other people that pop into those meetings and help out with different topics. So that's a great support. We also have a mentoring program that kicks in year two. So after they're done with that really formal induction program, they're a little more aware. They kind of know what to expect in year two.
Right.
And they have a mentor to support and, you know, up their game, but answer some questions along the way. We also have daily team meetings. We call them our team PD time. So dedicated time every day, student free, where staff are meeting either with grade level partners or cross curricular partners to meet about all the important things they need to meet about. Maybe, you know, one day they may have a visit from someone from a technology training or a special education training or the MTSS coordinator. So all those days pre-planned, but structured around the needs of the staff, built into the school day. So they're not having these late afternoon meetings and morning meetings and all those things.
Yeah, it gives you an opportunity to use that time wisely without like, oh, I need you to stay after, or oh, I need you to come in early, or whatever. Yeah, it's a tough job. It's a tough job. They teachers are dedicated, and yeah, I love the fact that you guys are focused on taking care of them. You know, we talk about taking care of the kids and taking care of special education program, and everybody's struggling with getting enough teachers, and it's getting to be competitive. So doing things and being conscientious of the fact that, hey, this and we the same thing here. I mean, we're a therapy company, so and there I'm an SLP. I'm a speech therapist. I have been for 31 years, and I have in my entire career, there are five jobs behind me that I can step into from this job. You know, it's like I keep my license active. I don't even really practice, quote, anymore because but you know, after you've done something for, what do they say, 10,000 hours, and then you're an expert, right? But you just, you know, it's like there's 20 other people that are ready to take that therapist or take that teacher and utilize them. So that's kudos to you guys. It's really important, I think. And I think that and ultimately, because you're taking care of your teachers, the kids win, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what would you say to a new teacher that is looking, what kinds of things would you say that you would say, hey, if you're looking for a new position, make sure that your school is going to have this. Cause I think you guys have it. And what, even if they don't choose you, let's educate those that are not, maybe not even in Pennsylvania. What should you be asking? What kinds of things should you be looking for when you're looking for a job as a new teacher or as a teacher that's moving into a new area? Or like you said, coming from a different career.
Yeah, what a great question. I think one thing that I would encourage new teachers to look for is the flexibility. Does the school or the workplace have an openness to, when you're in those team meetings or when you're in those PLCs, whatever your school is using, are there conversations happening where your voice is being asked for? You're not having to feel like you're having to wait or hope someone reaches out, but it's really a welcoming environment where your opinion, but also your autonomy, is going to be respected. I think it's really important for the staff member to also be flexible. You're going to walk into a situation with, roughly 28, 30 variables, and being able to kind of go with the flow, but understand that there's a job to do, is so important. And I think a lot of times new teachers might feel like they have to fit a certain construct, or if they don't get a certain thing done that day, they're going to have to explain it. So really making sure that there's flexibility on both ends, that, just as much as you want to notice when your students need to relearn something or need some additional support, you want to make sure that your leaders, supervisors, whatever they call them, are also checking in on you and kind of ebbing and flowing with the support you might need with your students.
Yeah, it's really important and great. Those are great, great ideas. The worst thing that you want as somebody who's new is feel like you're being dictated to. There's so many things that we have a group on LinkedIn called Special Education Leadership Development Group that Lighthouse sponsors, and it's that idea, and we're always, other people are contributing as well, but it's about being a good leader, being a person that understands and has empathy and cares about their staff and servant leadership and all of those concepts. But and it's really important, as and you talk about social emotional, and social emotional isn't just the kids, it's the staff too. Everybody's, it's a crazy world that we live in, right? So yeah. So let's switch topics just a little bit. So as the CEO, you mentioned budgets and how does it work in Pennsylvania when you have a school, a charter school? Where does the money come from, and how did you get your charter? I mean, it's 25 years you've been doing that, the school's been there, but I'm sure it's something that you have to maintain. So what does that look like for you as the leader of that school?
Sure. So in Pennsylvania, the funding formula is that the dollars follow the students from the districts that they are coming from. So we are a one authorizer charter school, but we do have students coming to our school from all over. So they can come technically from any county in the state, as long as they have Pennsylvania residency. The vast majority of our students come from Montgomery and Chester County, which are nearby. But every school district has a different funding amount. So it's based on their per pupil spending from the previous year. So about 18 months behind where their spending happened is how the allocation is determined. And it's about 70 to 75% of what their per pupil spending is. And that's because the law does allow them to retain that percentage for administrative costs and so forth. So we have a daily attendance rate. We bill the districts monthly. So every district is billed based on the number of kids from their school that attended our school, X number.
A little easy.
So it's a pretty big process.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, yeah. If you're pulling from one or two districts, it obviously isn't quite as laborious. We pull from about 24 different school districts. So at any given time, we could have 24 different rates that we're billing a district for. So budgeting can be challenging because we don't always know, first of all, what that 18 months ahead is going to look like. In a small district that only sends a few students, one or two students difference could mean a difference in, you know, that funding rate. So really kind of keeping an eye on enrollment, keeping an eye on where students are coming from, you know, making sure that our awesome business office is on top of the billing and making sure students are coming through and, you know, all those boxes are getting checked. So that is definitely a big part of how we build our budget and determine what we can spend money on.
So then are you receiving the money in arrears then? Like you're spending and the students, like then you get paid for the student after the fact?
Yes, we bill. Okay. We bill monthly, and we do get we can bill 12 months. So, you know, we're billing all throughout the 12 month period, but based on the attendance at the last day of school and first day of school.
And how does that translate into special education? And students that are maybe on a 504. How does that differentiate? Is there a difference? I would assume so, but I'm not going to assume.
So the special education student rate is different, but also fixed. So when the school district determines their rate, which is supposed to be done by November of each school year for that current year. So once that rate is fixed, there's a special ed rate, there's a regular ed rate, and that's how we go. We do have to obviously provide the documentation that indicates they have a IEP. There is no funding for 504 students. They fall under regular education funding. So that doesn't differ as far as the billing goes.
Interesting. I did. You taught me something I was very much unaware of, that does not make a difference. So then do you also, because you're a charter, then you guys can also apply for grants and federal money, correct?
Yes. When things are available, we absolutely, you know, there are things we were eligible to apply for. Many of the same stipulations, you know, apply. We received an allocation of some of the ESER's COVID grants that were coming out a few years ago, you know, just every other school. Formulas are basically usually based on enrollment and or Title I status often comes into play with some of that grant money. But when opportunities arise, we certainly try to take advantage of those and apply for what's available.
So explain to somebody, because, you know, we have our lingo and people don't, you know, I never know who's listening, right? So I've heard the term Title I a lot. Can you explain to our listeners what exactly is Title I?
So that's a big question.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Title I refers to the federal grant money falls into different titles. So there are actually lots of other titles that you can and, you know, get different funding under. Title I is tied to your free and reduced numbers. So how your school determines the economically disadvantaged category. As a targeted Title I school, which we had been for many, many years, you were receiving a certain amount based on that number, but had to use those funds for targeted specific students. And that's set up in your goals. So you might determine, you know, our targeted students are going to be all the kids that are below in reading. And that's what our Title I funds are going to be spent on. And it's complicated, but, you know, simply put, that's how you would determine how those funds would be spent. This past year, we actually became a full Title I school, which means that we're no longer targeted. We're new to being a full Title I school, so I may not even know all the ins and outs of that, but it means we can spend the money on all of the students locally. Okay. So we still have to account for it, of course. We still have to designate certain areas for it. But for instance, if the whole second grade is going on a field trip and it helps meet our, say, literacy goals, we can use that money to help support that whole group on that, you know, that trip. Whereas before it had to be spent on specific staff members who were doing maybe Title I tutoring or something like that. So that's a little new to us, but we're kind of excited to see if that can benefit our students more. In the past, that was based on if you had 50% or more Title I students, or sorry, economically disadvantaged students.
Right. So the students that qualify for free or reduced lunch, right?
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. And it's a little confusing, I think, because it's based on that number. And I think a lot of times people think that money has to be spent on those students, but that's not necessarily the case.
Gotcha.
It's more about the needs of the students. Those kids may not be the same students that have literacy goals, for example.
Right. Right, right. Yeah. So how does a school then go from being targeted to a full Title I school? Is there a formula that you like based on the numbers that you have from year to year? Are you reporting them and then that changes it? Or is it something that you have to apply for?
So it is. You don't have to apply for it. You're reporting all these numbers to PDE already. So they're kind of seeing that trigger of you've hit this number, you're now in this designation.
Okay.
So our free and reduced numbers have gone up
since
the pandemic. We have definitely seen an increase in families needing support. So that is how we got that change in designation. I don't believe it changes year to year. I believe once you have it, unless there would be a drastic change over a period of time, they might roll it back. That, again, it's new to us, so I'm not exactly sure how that piece of it works.
And you said PDE, so I'm assuming that's the Pennsylvania Department of Education, right?
It is. Thank you.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I do this all the time because we love our acronyms. Yeah. My son joined the Air National Guard in Michigan, and you want to talk about a group of people that like their acronyms. The military is worse than education. And he has definitely like picked up that lingo. And I'm a speech therapist. So, you know, it's like every industry has their own vocabulary. You know, it's like, exactly, you know. So, but as a podcast, somebody who's hosting a podcast, and I don't know who's listening, I always like, we have to make sure that, and that's why I ask those questions, because it's like, I want to make sure that people understand, because one of the things about the Brighter Together podcast is I want to make sure that people understand that we are doing amazing things in education, and Renaissance Academy Charter is one of those places that is doing amazing things, and we get such a bad rap. Education has been beat up in the media, and that's why we're here. That's part of the reason why we're here, is because it makes me mad. Honestly, it's one of those, you know, talk about somebody who just light a fire under me and start talking about something that's happened in education when you do not know, and you sit on your high horse. My mom used to always say that, just get off your high horse, right? Yeah, it just is one of those things where it's like people need to understand that there are people like Gina and your teachers and your schools. And I don't care if it's a public, a charter, or a virtual, whatever. There are so many people out there that are fighting for education and fighting for these kids day in and day out. And that is the reason that Brighter Together exists. And I love the fact that you have a passion for your teachers, a passion for your school, and are willing to come on and help to explain how it works, you know, because we think we know, you know, I went to school, so I think I know, right? That's not reality, is it? No. So anyway, I get on my soapbox. You got me on my soapbox. But it's the point. The whole point of it is to really help people to understand that you guys are doing a great job. How many kids did you have graduate this year?
Oh, 78.
Awesome. See, those are 78 kids that now have a high school diploma because of the work that you guys have been doing for the last 25 years. And that matters. It absolutely matters.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. And they're special ed kids, and the 504 kids, you know, you're not getting any extra money for them, but there's a bigger cost. I that surprised me when I didn't realize that there was no funding for 504. So, you know, and I'm in special education. I should know that. So now I do. Thank you for educating me.
And that's Pennsylvania. I'm sure things could be different in other states, but that's, you know, the current situation here. But yes,
yeah,
it's a complicated world, but
yeah,
we certainly want to do everything we can to get the kids where they need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there are the education. And that's why it's such a hot button, too, because these are our kids. These are the future, or the children that we're educating are the future of our world, of the United States. They're the ones that are going to make the decisions, you know, when I'm dead and buried. Right. Somebody's got to decide. Right. So let's do a good job. Let's take care of them. Right. Okay, so I have one other question that I try to ask. I don't ask everybody, but I am going to ask you because I think it's a great question. And when I ask this question, it's like within the sphere of your world as the CEO, as the superintendent, whatever. And you can't use money because everybody says they would love to have more money. I want more money. Everybody needs more money. But if there was one thing that you could just miraculously solve, like, and in within the things that you struggle with or would like to see improved in your school, I don't want to just say struggle with, but what would that be? What would be that one thing that if you could just make it not be an issue anymore, what would you want to change? What would it be?
Wow, that is a great question, especially to ask in June, when yeah. Chance to breathe and catch our breath a little bit.
Yeah.
I would say, and this is kind of, I hope this is what you're looking for. This is kind of the Pollyanna view of things, that if we could have families, kids, community, you know, come to situations with grace and understanding, and the mindset that whatever is going on and whatever we might be upset about or confused about or worried about, the person on the other end wants to solve the issue too. Mm-hmm. And I feel like almost to what you said earlier, a lot of times, more so lately, people are coming into schools upset, rightfully so perhaps, or something's occurred. And, you know, this is about a child, we're defensive, we're emotional, but often coming into situations assuming the worst. And
right.
I'm sure that's not unique to education, but, you know, if we could all start from a better place of what are we trying to solve, and truly all have the best interests of the kid in mind. No one goes into this type of work with a, you know, malicious wanting to do harmful things, punish kids, etc. Like sometimes is the mindset. And I just think that if we could start from a better, more kind place of understanding, we'd get a lot more done and we'd lose a lot less teachers who get, you know, frustrated.
They feel like they're beat up. Yeah. It's like you reframe the narrative, right? Let's reframe the narrative from the beginning, right? Yeah, for sure. Well, Gina, great conversation. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for answering all of my questions. And so where should people go if they want to learn more about you and Renaissance Academy Charter? Where do they go?
So you can visit our website. It is rak12.org on the web. You can find a lot of great information there. If you're local, lots of open house and visiting opportunities. We'd love to have you come visit. You can find us on Phoenixville.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for your expertise. Thank you for your passion for the teachers and for the kids. And keep up the good work.
Thank you.